Hello, friends, and welcome to the grand story of Esther. This is a story like no other in the Bible. Intrigue and deception, beauty and danger, a sinister plot, an identity concealed, a destiny revealed. This is my kind of story. And right off the bat, its title character is a woman. Could this be the girl power story I've been searching for? The one I can tell my daughters to help them see their value and beauty in God's eyes. If that's the book of Esther, I'm in. Listen, I have two beautiful daughters, so intelligent, so talented, and with all the materialistic and objectifying messaging they get about womanhood, I would love to have a girl power story for them with God at the center of it. So let's do this. A little warning, Esther may surprise you, both the story and the woman. Now, if you were raised in a Jewish family, this story is quite familiar. It is one of their most beloved stories, told and retold each year, late winter, during the feast of Purim. And for all of us who have heard it before, I want us to do something. I want us to come to Esther with fresh ears. Sit down on the floor with the kids at Purim as Grandpa tells the story, and enter it anew. Allow the story to reveal itself. But come on, it's story time. I'll catch you up as we go. Esther, chapter 1, verse 1. This is what happened during the time of Xerxes, the Xerxes who ruled over 127 provinces, stretching from India to Kush. As the story opens, we are swept back in time 2.5 millennia to one of the largest empires this world has ever seen. The year is 483 BC, and King Xerxes reigns over the consolidated kingdoms of Media and Persia. The Hebrews call him Ahasuerus, and just take a look at the map, an empire stretching from India to Kush. That's the entire Middle East, including what was once Israel's kingdom and well into Northeast Africa, as vast as the mind can imagine. 127 provinces. Amazing. And our story takes us directly to the king. Verse 2. At that time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa, and in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his nobles and officials, the military leaders of Persia and Media, the princes, and the nobles of the provinces were present. A royal banquet, opulent beyond imagination. Walk in with me. The king has ruled for 3 years now. He is filthy rich, and he thinks it's high time he showed it off. Verse 4. For a full 180 days, he displayed the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and glory of his majesty. I guess one of the benefits of conquering 127 provinces is a whole lot of loot, the art, the treasures, the gold of many nations, and the king's citadel gets the best of the best. Just look at it all. And this isn't a museum. It's Xerxes' palace. It's all his, a one-man world's fair. Look again at the words in verse 4. His kingdom and the splendor and glory of his majesty. But hold on a second. Words like that belong in the Bible, but glory and majesty are usually attributed to God. And speaking of God, where is he? Ancient Persia is a pagan kingdom. What are we doing here? Sorry, Grandpa, I'm interrupting. Back to the citadel. Verse 5. When these days were over, the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days in the enclosed garden of the king's palace for all the people from the least to the greatest who were in the citadel of Susa. Now that is generous. Xerxes finishes the 6-month exhibition with a special banquet for everyone in the citadel, even the least. Guess that means us too. And check this place out. I guarantee you have never been to a banquet like this. In verse 6, the garden had hangings of white and blue linen, fastened with cords of white linen and purple material to silver rings on marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver. That's couches made of gold on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and other costly stones. The entire pavement is a mosaic work of art. The ground sparkles as you walk on gemstones. Then a servant approaches. Verse 7. Wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other. Hold on, they just handed us goblets made of gold, each one an original work of art in gold in your hand. And in verse 8, the king commands the wine stewards, serve each man as much as he wants. Amazing. But hold on, each man? Where are all the women? Verse 9. Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the royal palace of King Xerxes. Ah, so the queen has her own banquet. Maybe this is a girl power story. Until verse 10. On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, he commanded the 7 eunuchs who served him. Now connect with the king here for a moment. He's feeling great. He's in the zone, showing off, being generous. He's the man. Everyone loves him, and they love his palace. It's gorgeous. Wine kicks in, king gets cocky. What else can I show off? And it hits him. You think this garden is beautiful? Just wait till you see my wife. So Xerxes commands his eunuchs, in verse 11, to bring before him Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown, in order to display her beauty to the people and nobles, for she was lovely to look at. Okay, wait, pause story. I'm just not sure what to do with that. I mean, I get it. He's the king. He's showing off. And his wife is beautiful. And he's right, isn't he? No matter the palace, the garden, the art gallery, or grand banquet hall, all of it fades when a beautiful woman enters the room. It's amazing, isn't it? One woman could stop that whole banquet hall. And isn't that a fine compliment to her? On the other hand, isn't that treating her like an object? Put on display? The queen? Persian women in this time generally cover their heads out of modesty and propriety. They don't just strut for men to gawk at. What kind of girl power story is this? All right, unpause. Sorry, Grandpa. Back to the story. Verse 12. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. Then the king became furious and burned with anger. Since it was customary for the king to consult experts in matters of the law and justice, he spoke with the wise men who understood the times and were closest to the king. So, for all his wealth and power, King Xerxes can't control his woman. And who does he ask for advice? 7 men. Brilliant. Now hold on. Pause again. There's just so much that's messed up about this story already. I mean, I know the scene looks lovely and all, but all this wealth and opulence was taken by force, through war. Those 7 eunuchs that work for the king, you know why they're eunuchs? Because they were castrated. They were forced into a life with no family so they could run the king's harem. And I won't even start on how ungodly that is. And where's the girl power? This chapter ends with an edict that every man should rule over his own household. And the king called for wise men, experts in law. God's wisdom and God's law are so far from this whole scene. God's law? A king doesn't multiply wives. Xerxes has a harem. God's wisdom? Honor your wife. Xerxes treats his wife like an object. But then, this isn't God's kingdom. It's Xerxes' kingdom. So what are we doing here? And more importantly, where is God? In most Bible books, the Lord comes up by now, usually in the first sentence. Here, not the tiniest mention. But some stories are like that. Let's be real. Sometimes life is like that. Sometimes your life can feel so caught up in worldliness and so far from God's law, God's wisdom, God's presence. And you have to ask, where is he? And that is the unspoken question of Esther, a question that some scholars have raised to suggest that this book doesn't belong in the Bible at all. Where is God? I wanted a girl power story with God at the center of it. This one looks like he's not here at all. Where are you, Lord? I told you Esther would surprise you. Don't go too far. There's more to this story yet. I'll see you next time.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.